Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 47 of the Mini PC Show. Big talk, small computers. Dora, you're my favorite person in the world. How are you doing today?
I'm nuts, insane, normal. The world of mini PCs in very typical fashion seems like it's not slowing down one iota.
You know, I just thought about it. On the other show I do, Tilt, we had Kevin O'Brien on talking about PenguinCon, and Ohio Linux Fest mentioned its dates. Gosh, I had that open a few minutes ago. Was it September 29th?
Yeah, I believe September 29th and 30th, last weekend in September.
So last year, Dor gave away all sorts of stuff. I gave away a bunch of Pi Zeros while I was there. And we did this out of the goodness of our heart. And I should claim a small fraction of a percentage of what was given away because you were very generous. And you gave a great talk at Ohio Linux Fest. And it was the most packed room, standing room only. I posted pictures on my Google Plus page. Have I embarrassed you yet?
No, I'm fine. I'm beyond embarrassed. I don't know if I'm going to put in for a talk this year. I'm debating it, but if I am, I don't know what the topic's going to be.
Well, I would love to do a mini PC talk like the both of us.
I don't know what, it's one of those things when you're in a forest for a really long time, mm-hmm. You know, what's there to talk about trees for when you go into the city? Talking about trees is interesting, but
right.
you think everyone already knows it. I don't know what in the world in mini PCs, I don't want to say needs to be talked about, but what's worth talking about.
So I was thinking about a panel talk or so, you know, if we had me, you, I don't know who else, we talked Jonathan Nadeau coming out, but he doesn't do mini PC stuff.
Accessible software was more available on ARM processors, he would, but they're not.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not. And to get him to come out is not an easy task because there is no direct bus route from there to Columbus. Closest we could get was literally like three or four times the cost of like the bus ride down to me.
Oh crap! So if I had a flying airplane, I could pick him up, but that's not the case.
Well, if it wasn't a flying airplane, I'm sure it wouldn't help. let me think. I do think we only had a little bit of email. Half of it was people asking for access to the Mattermost server, which I will pimp that once again. If you want a closed community of non-trolling people, our Mattermost server is a private, non-Google index searchable place where we can talk without being on Facebook, hearing about United Airlines, without hearing about ex-football players committing suicide or anything else that we don't find enjoyable to discuss. You can just shoot me an email at mail@podnos.com and I can add you to that server. Really easy, really quick. It literally cost on our DigitalOcean droplet like $3 a month.
Really?
So, yeah, it's super cheap.
I haven't taken a dive into the DigitalOcean. I'll have to check that out.
In the past, I always decided I'm going to host everything myself in my own network and open ports. I got to the point where it's so cheap.
Mm-hmm.
It's so dirt cheap. Why not at least try it out? So I decided to dip my toe in it. And so far, I'm actually really happy with it. I don't like them as a company. I don't think they're the best company out there doing this, but they're the most stable company out there doing this. Every other company I checked out is gone by now.
I'm not going to throw props to my host in company because every time I want to do something, they're like, oh, you have the Linux reseller account. Yeah, you can't use PHP 5 on that. I'm like, why not? Oh, you'd have to move up to, you know, this other account. I'm like, but why won't you have PHP 5 on that? So, yeah, I want to throw some apps on. I went through Nextcloud on my hosted account and can't do it. But then again, I'm paying next to nothing each month for my hosting, for my reseller hosting. So, okay.
Yeah, that's the thing about DigitalOcean that I do like is you get full root access on the box to where you can install whatever you want, whenever you want, however you want, and there's no questions asked kind of thing. I will say you can make backups. You can turn servers off and then not get paid for them and then turn them on only when you need them. You can, I believe, also have a scheduler system. So hypothetically, you can say only turn this server on between 12:30 and 1 a.m. and in the night, every night, and have a scheduled thing doing stuff connecting. It's actually pretty flexible.
That sounds very nice. I definitely got to check that out because, you know, root access is a big deal if you're doing anything with apps on the internet. anyhow, going to do a little bit of a segue from last week into this week. Last week we were talking about the upboard squared coming out, and I think it was the day after we recorded, so it must have been Thursday morning last week, that I got an email that said, hey, you can wait, we'll start delivering in 4 weeks a pre-production board, or if you want to wait 8 weeks, you can get a production board. And I always said, need it fast. And I said, okay, send it to me. So I'm going to get a pre-production board that apparently isn't supported in 4 weeks. And after I said yes to that, I'm like, oh, maybe I should have waited the full 8 weeks and got a production board.
No, I mean, hindsight's always 20/20, but I can't see how I would say, I'll wait. My instinct would always be, give it now.
Yeah, yeah, I'm like the kid with Christmas and, you know, hoping that the batteries were installed.
Right.
So I'm kind of excited about that because I've been really, you know, pimping out my home lab, and I definitely want to run thin client, and I have more machines running Ubuntu around me than other OSs, at least in my office.
Gotcha. So really quick, you want to give, just in case someone doesn't remember it, the quick key specs on this mini PC upboard squared?
Okay. So the big factor for me, it's a gig Ethernet, and it's got 2 gig Ethernet ports. The other big thing is it's got 2 HDMI ports on it. It's got USB 3 SATA, power for SATA. I'm doing this all off the top of my head. I think the one I ordered has 8 gigs of RAM and a 64 meg SSD. I'm sorry, eMMC. And if they did the original upboard with 2 HDMI ports, that'd fit my need. But
right.
Yeah, you know, it sounds real good. I'm real excited about it. And what's the website? Is it up-dash? Hold on, let me pull it up. Might as well give the folks a link. It's up-board.org, and you can see all about it there. And they got a Kickstarter, and they have 3 products now. So they have the Up Core, the original Up, and the Up Squared.
Yeah, and the original Up, it's a very capable mini computer, Intel Atom processor. I believe it went up to 4 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, the one we have is 4 gigs.
Yeah, very, very capable mini computer for the size, unbelievably productive board, but it is a mini computer and it is an Intel Atom processor, so it's not the most powerful screaming box in the world. The Upboard 2, the dual NIC alone, to me opens up incredible paths for that thing to be hardware firewall in intrusion detection. I mean,
Here's the cool thing is if you do it tight enough, you can run that as a virtualization host, and you could have like your honeypot virtualized on there. You could do, you know, your intrusion detection. You could do a bunch of different things.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And because it's x86 x64 processor, anything you can do on a desktop or laptop, essentially you can do on here too.
And that's what's very exciting. So things that I've been running, like CrashPlan, and it's a bit of CrashPlan is really a Java app, but there's a couple of libraries that it uses. And I had to I have a Banana Pi Pro and a Raspberry Pi 3 doing CrashPlan, and I had to force them both from updating. I had to basically symlink them to like devnull, the directory where it would write the updates, and that prevents the board from the CrashPlan software from updating. So I don't know if I'm going to get closed out in the future with future releases, but
well, bottom line, you know, and I know that means that the clock is ticking on compatibility,
right,
where sooner or later it's just going to stop working.
But I think there's another force. So yes, there's definitely a compatibility clock ticking, and the death clock is getting closer. The other factor or force in the equation, I think, is the prevalence or proliferation of mini PC type devices. So I think they're probably going to either officially or unofficially going to have some sort of support for Raspberry Pi or other Pi-type devices.
Well, yeah, I mean, here is the big, fat, lie in the universe, and that is, well, with Java, you code once, you run anywhere. Well, if that was true, we wouldn't need them to create a special version or add support, but they do. So, you know, once they become popular enough, and I've even seen small, like, enterprise entrepreneur companies pop up where their business is handing people enclosed Pi devices customized with, you know, cases on them to look pretty to do specialized jobs. So it's only a matter of time before Java becomes more capable on it. The question is it going to be real full-blown Oracle Java, or are the open Java type things going to become better? I'll say right now I have horrible success with open Java, which is, long story short, open Java doesn't work like Java because it ain't Java. LibreOffice doesn't work like Microsoft Office because it ain't Microsoft Office. All that kind of thing. It's the unfortunate truth of computing and open sources. The open things can never perfectly emulate the closed source things because they're closed source. Yeah, so hopefully they do pick it up soon, because CrashPlan is one of those solutions I really like to see gain traction and gain more people on it, because I do think it's one of the better solutions out there.
Well, it's cross-platform, so Linux, PC, Mac, it all runs. Plus the CrashPlan program, you know, the server portion will run on your PC, on your Mac, or on your Linux device. You can do peer-to-peer, so if, you know, Dor and I were running CrashPlan, we could back up to each other's servers. I'm also paying for the cloud, and that's like the family plan, I think, is $150 a month, and you've got to pre-cancel. Like, you can't just wait till that time and say, oh, I don't want to, because you paid for the year. You paid the fee for the year. So I wanted to make sure I was up and running and everything was good. As I kind of rate devices in my unscientific way, I've said many times the Banana Pro is a rock star. That's a, you know, no thought process on, definitely buy it if you think that's what you need. The Odroid XU4 I might place above it, because I am super happy with that. And the Raspberry Pi family, you know, a Pi 3 is cheaper than dirt, and that just works for so many things. That's really a go-to. That's a no-brainer also.
Yeah, I'll say really quick, on the Upboard Squared, 3 USB 3.0 ports.
And I think an OTG.
The 3 full-size one in the OTG, which is really impressive. The 2 Ethernet, 2 true gigabit Ethernet, and the true two HDMI ports are really unbelievable in comparison to other mini computers. But also, this has a mini PCI Express, I want to say like a pin header. So technically, you can hook up PCI Express X1, X1 to the board, which I'm sure if you know what you're doing in the sense of hardware, you could get this to do even more crazy amounts of stuff. I'm really honestly excited to hear when you get this and your thoughts and opinions on it, kind of thing. But also say you have one leg up more than likely versus a large percentage of people who ordered this board. And that is, you literally have a 3D printer in your garage. Yes. So when the day comes, you get this board, you can literally have your own custom case for it, because a mini computer is nice and it's great to have. But if you can have it in a functional case, it adds some, I don't know. It adds to the essence of it being a good product, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I'll say really quick, I'm pretty sure it's just about a year, if not more, my Banana Pro has been up and running consistently, because I now have it on a RAV power USB portable battery pack that can charge and discharge at the same time. So it's like my battery backup for my Banana Pro. So the uptime for that thing is well over, I know, 9 or 10 months by now. So to say it's a rock star is a really big understatement. It is the most stable mini PC platform I've ever had. It's not the fastest. It ain't the smoothest. It ain't, you know, the most future compliant. It doesn't have the best, you know, ports in the world, but it is by far the most stable one I think I've had.
Okay. The last time I logged into my Banana Pro was December 22nd.
Right.
So the uptime is 151 days.
Wow.
And the last time it was down, it was because I was doing something in my, I was going to say cabinet, my data center in a drawer. I was, you know, moving power, changing power, something.
Gotcha. And I'll say one of the things that really made me happy about the Banana Pro product was later when I went back to the website LeeMaker.com and it had John Mad Dog Hall plastered all over the website. There's few people in computing that I feel, at least digitally, have the same ethics I have in computing. You know, like what should be free, what should cost money, how computing should be done, how code should be developed. You know, what is the purpose of computers? What is the purpose of all these pieces of hardware we have? I like him and I like what I see from Lee.
Mad Dog does computing? I thought he just went to cons and drank.
Well, he doesn't anymore since since he had, I believe, was 3 strokes in a matter of 2 days.
Oh, it was strokes? I thought it was heart attacks.
I thought it was, maybe it was both.
Oh, man. Well,
I was talking to Jonathan. So, yeah, now he doesn't do anything except stay at home and do computing stuff, which he still has, what I'm led to believe, a really good contract doing work that supposedly nobody else on the face of the planet can even begin to do the type of work he's doing because he's such an expert in what he does.
Oh, very cool. Kevin O'Brien was just saying, and Kevin O'Brien was on our show talking about PenguinCon, and he was just saying John Hall is, you know, traveling to Brazil and stuff like that. So it looks like he's healthy enough to travel, so I'm happy about that.
He isn't traveling anywhere.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, no. Oh. His doctor said, his doctor told him, you're not traveling anywhere.
Oh, okay.
And that was the word I had like a couple weeks ago, so I don't think it changed.
Well, okay then.
Yeah. But I'll say this. Speaking of Brazil, line 415 in our notes. I got sent this link from a good friend, Aaron Turnbull. This is dedication is what I'm going to say. And it's over at Hackaday. Brazil wins the Raspberry Pi overclocking Olympics. I'm trying to remember. I cannot remember. I want to say the Raspberry Pi Zero is single core running at 1.8 megahertz. I can't remember now.
It's got to be gigahertz. It has to be gigahertz. Everything's gigahertz.
Well, then this doesn't make any sense because it says the world record now is set at 1620 megahertz.
So that's 1.62 gigahertz.
Right. And I thought it was already 1.8 gigahertz.
Yeah, I'd have to look that up. So yeah. I don't get this. What I don't get about it is it's frozen in a block of water, correct?
Well, it's water, but I'm guessing it's like sterile mineral water, and it has salt added to it.
I don't get the salt added to it. That doesn't...
Oh, yeah, salt, that's the gimmick way to make sure that your stuff gets colder, because salt water can remain liquid at a colder temperature than not salt.
I get that when you're making ice cream.
Well, and you need this to be at a liquid form, so when it gets hot, it moves away from the processor, and the more cold stuff comes in touch with it.
But if you have salt water, then it's conductive.
I'm just telling you what it
says. Yeah, this article didn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Okay, so the base speed is 1 gigahertz, single core processor, so that would be 1,000 megahertz. So it's been overclocked up to 1,620
megahertz.
So it's almost 62%, 162%
right,
of its speed, basically. And I will say, conductive material like this, I'm shocked they're using this and they're not just using like real liquid cooling.
Okay,
maybe that was part of the Olympic rules, quote
unquote. Well, I would figure like, hey, liquid nitrogen. Okay, you know what, I'm looking at the picture and I'm reading the article, and the one line that makes more sense is, hold on, it says the hot side dunked. So they put a piece of aluminum on the CPU, and I guess that is in the water or in something in contact with the water to conduct the heat, because it also looks like there's a Peltier junction there.
That is a huge aluminum block.
All right. Oh, okay. So that's an aluminum block, but it looks like there's a Peltier junction between the aluminum block and the pie. And okay, so now the salt water makes sense, because what you do in ice cream is you have crushed ice and you put salt on it, and the salt makes the basically cold or increases the absorption of heat. It was probably the proper thermodynamic way to say it. Okay, then that makes sense. So, I mean, I guess it's not legal to use liquid nitrogen.
Oh.
I would guess, because liquid nitrogen would be the winner.
Right, and to me, this heat sink aluminum block is literally gigantic. Well, I would think there would be a spot of diminishing returns, and that would be too big, but apparently,
well,
I don't know what the hell I'm talking
it's
about.
It's probably just a regular Intel CPU heat sink flipped upside down. Because if you look in the middle, you see that notch, and that's probably where the hold down is, you know, like where it's strapped down to the CPU.
Yeah, I did go to the blog. I don't see better pictures, really, but that does make sense to what you're saying. Yeah. Hmm. So now the question is, because here's the gimmick. I mean, this is just like step one. The question is what are people going to do to enhance that? And really, how high? I mean, I've heard of overclocking before, but I rarely hear about getting twice the megahertz or twice the hertz out of your processor.
Well, I've seen, you know, regular motherboards, regular Intel motherboards, where they put a cylinder on top of the CPU and the cylinder is filled with liquid nitrogen. You know, like a very tall, I mean, I'm talking several feet tall. So it's like the diameter of a Coke can, but several feet tall, and they fill that with liquid nitrogen. And so you can do X amount of computing for a, you know, higher duration.
Gotcha. Wow. Mm. So, I mean, this doesn't solve the issue of it being single core processor.
Right. We are really talking about the world's fastest ant.
Well, and this doesn't solve the problem of, for some damn reason, this thing's hard to get your hands on, unless you live by a microcenter or physically close to a microcenter, like microcenter did some kind of deal that nobody else can pull off. I don't know, because for me to even buy one online, I believe it was almost $10
for shipping.
Yeah, after everything said and done,
for the $5 computer,
right? And there's no microcenter close to me. I can go to one, but it's an extra 45-minute drive out of the way. And I thought with the Pi Zero W, the upgraded one with Wi-Fi on, well,
it's
maybe
$10 now,
be,
right?
Yeah, now it's $10. Which, to be honest, I'll happily pay $5 for Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially if the damn thing works. But it's just, I still cannot comprehend why it's so hard to get my hands on. To me, they are, unfortunately, leaving the door wide open for somebody else to compete. They just haven't got the traction yet. Everybody else hasn't got the traction yet.
Well, the Orange Pi Zeros, you know, they're pretty good competition. But the only problem is I have not been able to run Raspbian on them. They say they run Raspbian, but I have not been able to do that.
On, let me see what here this one is. On the Nano Pi Neo, I'm 99% sure I was able to run Raspbian on it, but it ran hot.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and that's always an issue. And anything Orange Pi in my life has been running hot, so you definitely need heat sinks.
Right, and I think this is the classic example of just because someone says it can work on it doesn't mean it's actually optimized to run well on it, because there's two different things between running on it and optimized for it, which means it doesn't almost catch on fire because of the heat, or lock up because of the heat, or randomly shut down because of the heat. But I will say there is another new NanoPi. Now, I know beginning of this year we were talking about, you know, the year in mini computers, what we saw as being good and bad and this kind of thing. And I said how I was upset at Raspberry Pi not innovating whatsoever, literally resting on their laurels, resting on their popularity. That's a surefire way of guaranteed failure sooner or later. The worst thing you can do in a first-person shooter game, for instance, is stand still. You're going to die. And I think that's the same thing in computing. You can't stand still, even though they're number three seller in the history of computing, whatever. Okay. But NanoPi are innovating almost to the point of fault, where none of their devices are getting any maturity, I'll say, and they're releasing the next product. Now, I'll say my logic is sooner or later, they're going to hit something that really does get released at the right time, have the right name, have the right people tweet it, and just get popular beyond all belief. And this, to me, is a competitor. This is a heavy competitor. It's called the NanoPi K2 board. It's, they say, a competitor to a Raspberry Pi 3 and an Odroid C2, which I, for a change, when somebody makes that statement, I actually kind of agree with them. The only downside is it's a 1.5 quad core processor, but A53 processor, okay? The lower that 10th digit, the more powerful it is. Because you know how you can't really compare hertz, you know, when you compare Intel versus Atom. Well, mm-hmm. And against ARM. Well, even if the different versions of ARM, it's really unfair to compare megahertz. So what I'm going to say is this is an A53 processor, which is really good. Okay. The lower the number, the better. And it's a lot of them are in the 70s. They're the 7 version. This is a 53. So that's actually not a bad processor. It is only 1.5, which is okay. But it says it's a quad-core processor with a pentacore GPU. Okay. We need more graphics processing. We need more graphics processing on these if they want to be considered as usable desktops. So this is a good start as far as I'm concerned. 2 gigabyte of DDR3, to me, 1 gigahertz is not, 1 gig of RAM is not enough. It's not enough because everything has more these days and OSs are being designed for more. So 2 is a great start. It does have a eMMC module socket, which I'm hoping it's not, you have to solder it on, but I'm not.
No. It's a header. It's a pin header. So it should snap in. And I'm just like, where do I get it?
Yeah, well, I don't believe you can actually buy it yet, or if you can on AliExpress, it might be like $40-something right now.
Yeah, well, that doesn't fly then.
Well, it's going to be more than $35. That I can guarantee it. It does also have gigabit Ethernet, 802.11bgn, also Bluetooth 4.0, AP6212, which is a higher version of Bluetooth, which is good. It also has an IPX connector for the antenna, which I believe is just a little nubby to snap on.
Mm-hmm.
4 USB 2.0 ports, no USB 3, which tells you and me this thing could be powered by a micro USB cable, but no. I believe it is powered by micro USB, which is good. Less stress, less aggravation.
Nope, it's a Canon connector.
No, really?
Yeah, scroll down the side view.
Ah, damn it. Oh, no. Or micro USB port.
Oh, yeah?
Select.
Is that what the lefty is?
Yeah.
Micro USB with OTG.
Yeah. Select via a jumper. So there's a little jumper that you can pick to which way you want to power it, which is almost, I want to say, exactly like the Odroid C2. It might have been the C1, but I think C2 also had that choice. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it has a 40-pin header, which everyone does. It has the 7-pin I2S interface, which I believe is the camera interface, if I'm not mistaken. So I like the idea of this. The question is how mature are the operating systems going to be, and are they going to make it to where they can actually lower the price by a hair? If you take a look at the picture, they also have a heatsink on it with a fan that hooks directly up to the board pin headers, which I'll say is fair. Right now it says you can go on friendlyarm.com. The board sells for $39.99 with shipping up to plus shipping, which of course, to me, that's always the wild card. Is it going to be $3 or is it going to be $20?
Right.
And if you remember in the past, Friendly Arm was one of the websites where when we went to go ship it, we were blown away at how much the shipping was.
So I'm over on the Friendly Arm and it's showing a number of pictures of it, and it does show it with the heatsink and the fan.
That's
so
good.
The question is, does it come with that?
If it's in the picture, I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes, it does. And I'm going to go, I'm going through the process right now of shipping, estimating shipping. 21085 is my zip. Get quotes. $5 looks like the cheapest shipping. So $44, $44.99. I wish it was a little bit less, but for that amount, I do think you're getting a decent bang for the buck.
Well, you know, you missed one of the items that I thought was kind of interesting on the board. So, the IR receiver.
Oh, yeah.
So if,
a lot of the NanoPies have that.
Yeah, if you want to use this as, you know, some sort of, you know, set-top box, some home theater PC type thing, that's good for that. Anytime, and I've learned to gain suspicion on when a device has like a gig Ethernet or SATA, is like, is this real gig Ethernet? Is this real SATA? And so that's one of the questions I'm curious about. I'm not, you know, I don't know these guys well enough that you know, I know if I if it's an Orange Pi device, that, yeah, it's hung off the USB bus. It's definitely not, you know, full speed to spec like that.
Well, it looks like there is no heatsink included in this. Right. If I scroll all the way down, it does say it ships with a remote control.
Oh, it does ship with a remote?
Which I'm kind of shocked at. If you go down to the bottom, shipping list, one NanoPi K2, one RC100 remote control, and one friendly Elec customized USB cable.
Oh, that's cool.
I do like the idea of a remote control.
All right, but midway down the page, it's showing the heatsink again.
I know.
And the fan.
But if you look beneath yeah. it says mounting holes ready for heatsink.
Are those the magic weasel words?
I'm guessing it has to be. I mean, that's what I have to assume. I don't see any link to like associated products or, you know, typically you see suggested products or associated products, and I don't see it there. So I'm going to guess it's somewhere else on the website. You have to actually look for the heatsink. I would really hope it doesn't need it, but with more power, I do think it's always going to be more probable that you're going to need a heatsink. I don't like the idea of a fan, but it's the kind of thing I think you're going to have to, you know, give up sooner or later.
Yeah, I don't know if my Odroid's fan spins because I do have a 100mm fan in my data center in a drawer, and it's not too far away from it. But I definitely am surprised that they're not showing the heatsink and the fan as an accessory along with the EMMC.
Well, to me, this is bad page design is what I'm going to say. If I go and I look for on the website just heatsink, I do see the link to it. I'll make sure that is in the notes. It is $5.99 for the heatsink. Again, I'm not going to say it's a ripoff because it isn't. I mean, it's $6. It's not crazily priced. It's also not completely cheap.
And I searched the site for EMMC and I couldn't find anything.
Yeah, that's. I'm going to guess they're relying on somebody else to provide it. I have to guess. Okay, well, I mean, I'm happy people are innovating. I'm happy people are challenging. I really would like this company. Can't believe I'm saying this, Richard. I really would like this company to slow down a couple of seconds. and like allow other people to hone their OSs, get everything, you know, quote unquote, tight and nailed down, and give these some of this hardware time to mature. Because if you go to friendlyarm.com and just click on, I believe it's products or hardware. I mean, it's a lot. It is a lot. They have four classes of mini boards, it looks like. No, it's more than that. Nano PC and Nano Pi, they have 14 different boards.
Crikey.
14 boards.
So I couldn't figure 14 different classes that I would be like, oh, okay, this is the one I need.
Well, some of them have Wi-Fi, some of them don't. Some of them have Ethernet, some of them don't. Some of them have more RAM, some of them have less. Some of them have better processors, some of them have less. It literally is a smorgasbord, which is good and bad.
So
choice is good.
The most expensive board is the Nano PC T1, which is $80.
That's a good amount, yeah.
And I'm seeing Ethernet, I see USB, I don't see USB 3.0. I see audio jacks, HDMI. It's a 400 megahertz Samsung S3C451 ARM 926EJ. Max frequency 533 megahertz.
With only 128 megabits of RAM.
Whoa, megabytes.
Whatever. This is must be old. This must be an old device, is all I'm saying.
Windows CE6.
Is out of stock.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Yeah, there's the T3, which looks newer, I'm going to guess, just because of a higher number. T3.
So it's $60, octa-core.
Yeah, better.
And
crazy ports.
1.4 gigahertz, 8 gig EMMC. Love the EMMC. And it says gigabit Ethernet.
Yeah, 1 gig of RAM, so more RAM. Yeah, I mean, I like NanoPi. I would say to anybody, they're good. They're a good brand, but first do your investigation to supported operating systems. And I will say, I like first finding an OS I like DietPi, then going to the DietPi website and finding out what hardware they support. That's how I make most of my decisions on these mini computers.
Diet Pi is a rock star in my mind.
Yeah, to me, there's only a couple OSs worth looking at that cross those kind of platforms. Diet Pi, Raspbian can be ran on other stuff. You have stuff like Berry Boot. Really good to find out different OSs that can run. And then if you want emulation of classic games, you have RetroPie, which unfortunately is spelled PIE, or you have Laka, I believe it's called, LAKKA, if you just want to do classic gaming. Very cool. I will put that up in the notes. You want to talk about your PiAware adventures here, Rich?
Oh, sure. So, let's see. My YouTube channel, it's youtube.com/user/RichardHughes260. And I did a video of, you know, setting up a mast because my PiAware, for those of you that didn't listen last week, it may be, PiAware feeds FlightAware. So it's a Raspberry Pi, and you're using a software-defined radio dongle, so a $20 TV tuner, and the stock antenna, which is how I've been running it. And it's been hanging out in my Tiki Hut on the bar and a piece of Gladware. And that worked okay. So finally, I mounted it on a 10-foot, inch-and-a-quarter PVC pipe, which was like $3 and change, and got it about 20 feet in the air above ground level, about 60 feet above sea level. And then I'm like, well, if one 10-foot extension, you know, 10-foot piece of pipe is good, maybe two 10-foot pieces of pipe are better. So I put it up a little higher, and in doing that, I had the Wi-Fi dongle. Both dongles were in the pipe, so the SDR dongle was at the top of the pipe, and midway up the pipe, or, you know, maybe a third of the way up the pipe, was the Wi-Fi dongle. And I drilled a hole, and I had the antenna pointing out vertically, and so it faced my access point in the back of my house for my backyard. And I know what I did, but I probably, you know, just moved the cable enough on the Wi-Fi dongle that it just wasn't making the connection. And I really did do a heavy-duty job of electrical taping the two together. So I did a post on Google Plus about this. I was like, darn, I could have just grabbed my Banana Pi M3, and because that has a big honking external antenna, and used it as an access point and just throw it back there. I ended up finding my $9 Tenda router, which has as crappy Chinese of a product as it is. When I saw it for $9 at why am I blanking at it? Where do you get the pies? What's the place called?
Micro Center.
Micro Center had it, and, you know, I went in one day, bought it, and then I went back the next day and I bought another one. Because I'm like, if one's good, two are better. So, and what's bad about it is because it's so cheap, I threw away the box. I put it in a Ziploc bag and put it in my Box O stuff. And that's the Box O stuff that comes off the top shelf of my closet every single day. I got to move it to a lower shelf. I don't know why I haven't. And I'm like, ooh, I need this to connect something together. And it was wedged. It's so small, it was wedged in the side of the box. I couldn't find it. So finally, I found it, pulled it out, plugged it in, boom, I got a connection. Day later, the $8 Wi-Fi dongle came from Amazon, you know, so I threw an Amazon search, you know, Wi-Fi, USB, Raspberry Pi, and I bought nearly the cheapest one, you know, that had an external antenna. And when I plugged it in, I was getting pretty poor performance. And so what I did is the shed is overlapping sheets of metal, and it's kind of stamped so it looks like planking. And I just poke the antenna down through in between the gap. And so it's pretty much rainproof, the electronic end, and just the antenna's out in the weather. What I did notice while doing a ping is I was getting just horrific connection. I'm like, oh, dummy me, I bought the cheapest antenna on the planet. Maybe I have to get it up higher. I'm going through all of the factors. Then I'm like, wait a second. I know something about RF, just a little bit. Higher frequency, like N in AC, so N's 2.4 gigahertz and AC is 5.8 gigahertz, they bounce off stuff as opposed to penetrating. So what I did is I, you know, from my remote console, my web UI, onto my access point, I just turned off everything other than G. So now my PiAware is connecting via G, and I'm getting, you know, like on the high end, 4 millisecond pings and nearly no dropouts.
Good.
So I'm very happy about that. I'd love to figure out, which I haven't done, is how to make the Pi just talk G only and not go to N, the N protocol. But I haven't dove into that because I'd like my access point to, you know, send and receive N also, because if something's close enough to do it, you know, it should. But maybe, you know, maybe for outdoors, G is better because it penetrates more and I'll get better connectivity.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. If you're in the same physical room and you can see stuff, like AC or N is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the high frequency. High frequency also means you can achieve higher speed.
Correct.
But yeah, it's just like cell phones. When you get the lower, what's it called?
3G, 4G, you're talking
band.
About.
No, even in 4G, when you get like down to the 600 megahertz type range,
mm-hmm.
you literally can pass through concrete, lead, and steel like it's nothing. Where if you're like Sprint, who's on a higher megahertz LTE band, it's hard for them to pass through toilet paper. You know what I mean? Same exact thing with the Wi-Fi routers. And I'll say, in my experience, unless you have a real high-end Soho router or small enterprise router, if you have more than one band enabled, all bands suffer. I typically take my routers, and I suggest other people to only have one band enabled. If you can connect with everything via N or higher, then fine, leave that on. But if you can't, leave it down to BN, you know, B or G or something like that, to a lesser speed one, and you'll actually get a more stable connection.
Mm-hmm.
In my own house, like if I have G enabled right on the top, right on the floor, right above the router, everything will work seemingly fine. But once you even move to the other side of that same floor, nothing even connects. It's just, you know, it's just that short of a range. And for me, it's not far at all. It might be 20 feet.
You said G enabled. Did you mean N?
I believe it was B and G, and I had to disable G and only enable B. And
Now
I can go like 60 feet away just fine.
Okay. Yep. Gotcha.
Yeah, this is not the newest router I have.
So the lower specs are, you know, lower frequency. So, you know, the B, the G are lower frequency than the N and the AC. And so the lower ones will travel further, penetrate deeper, whereas the data rate is slower. So the question is, your use case, do you need that high data rate?
Honestly, yes, because of stuff like Chromecast and Roku and all these things in the house. And because I don't, when my youngest son loads up his Kindle Fire tablet and starts streaming YouTube, everything else on the network suffers.
Wow.
Obviously suffers. So what I'm going to probably end up doing is getting two wireless routers, put them equally apart from each other kind of thing, so they're not right on top of another, and literally have kids network with the slower, you know, network, and then have the wife and the TV's network to be on a higher spectrum. I think I'm going to have to. I don't think I have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and when I start having IoT type stuff, custom configured IoT type stuff, the logic is then I'll even have to have a third network because I don't want anything. Same thing at work. To me, at work, you should have a money network,
mm-hmm.
the network where all the money transfers back and forth. You should have a PII network. That's where there's no money being transferred back and forth, but there's personal identifiable information, sensitive information being transferred back and forth. And then you have the third network, which is basically the office assistant network, where pointless emails about office
email, chat, whatever.
Right. And you should have that isolation by any way you can do it, whether it's enterprise VLANs or whatever you do it. But in home, the easiest thing to do, and I hate saying it, is just having different routers.
Yeah, I'm actually doing that. So there's a partial handicap on that is because you may want to get from one network to another. And so my VMware lab is on, you know, 192.168.0, whereas everything else is on .1. And so the .0 can see the .1 stuff, but not vice versa.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, once you open up the whole, then why do you even have them on separate networks? Because you start to throw security at the window.
Right.
It is really a compromise in every shape, way, or form to decide how to do this. There is no right way. It's however it works for you kind of thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind setting up a VLAN because really in the Asus router I have, I forget, it's not Thor. There's a, it will do DDWRT and other OSs. And there's another, I was going to say Greek, Thor is, what mythology? That's Norse mythology. So there, I forget what it is, but there's a OS for my router, but my router's the core of my network. I don't want to mess with it. If I had a second one, I would, but that isn't the case. And it,
trust me, dude,
it would allow me to do VLANs.
You're preaching to the choir here. I have a Edge Ubiquiti Router X that I cannot initiate. I cannot initiate on my network. And it's because the only way, there is no doing in test. There is no doing this in dev. You have to do this in production. Setup will not complete if it doesn't have an internet access.
Oh.
Okay. Which is a horrible way to do it. It's a horrible way to do it. So I got to literally disconnect everything I own to hook this up to do an internet connection test. And then after I get it connected, I'm having a hard time having my other routers connect to it.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't seem to work. And I can't find out, and I can't troubleshoot, and I can't do this without having an internet connection, which, of course, I can have on my phone, but that's just slow as hell. And I can't have downtime because then the kids' this doesn't work, the other kids' that doesn't work, and the wife's Roku won't work. So I don't have duplicate infrastructure. Now, if I had two separate internet connections, yes, I could do this, but I don't. So the Edge Ubiquiti router has been sitting here for literally over 2 months, I want to say.
Oh, no.
Because I have work, so I'm not here 8 hours a day. I have kids and family who are up until 9-ish at o'clock. The wife's actually up till later. I do the podcast. Then when I'm done doing the podcast, I got to edit. And then when I'm done editing, I got to post. And then I still got to do my research for all the other shows. So I just haven't had time to do this in off hours. I should take off a day of work and do it then, but every time I'm not a network guy. I don't know. I don't understand layer 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. If there is a 7 or 8, I don't understand any of them. So when I start to come into networking issues, I just feel useless, hopeless, can't figure it out. So I get frustrated, disconnect, hook the old one back up and say it works fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, 2 days later, I get mad because it isn't working fine. So yeah, I'm literally tempted to ship this to somebody and say, here, configure it for me. And then ship it back. I'll pay you money.
Well, I got probably a very similar type functioning router. It's a MikroTik and as an eval, and I haven't been able to figure out how to make it work. And
not
I have built entire ISPs from the ground up. It's one of those things. I just need to spend a little bit more time, read the instructions. It just wasn't intuitive. Right.
Well, yeah, and it seems like each one of these companies, like, I don't want to say to use their own verbiage, but there's always one or two terms that they'd like to have as their own. But we have, you know, nature source routing. What the hell is nature source routing? And then you come to find out it's just a NAT firewall, but they like to call it something else.
Right. The branded
weird
name.
Things like that. Yeah. Which drive me up a wall.
Where, you know, when you look at routers or switches or something like that, if you're used to Cisco IOS, you're used to looking at like a text file and editing that and for the config. And then this router apparently has some Windows app that allows you to config it. And I'm like,
yeah. Yeah. That will definitely discourage you. I honestly think I figured out the last time afterwards what my problem was. Like other host on this network, Mark Cockrell, Android App Addicts, who got the Google Wi-Fi, what he had to do was in his other router, disable everything, turn it into a stupid bridge device. I think what I have to do, and this makes no sense to me, if I'm hooking my device, my router up to it to do the wireless stuff, I have to turn off DHCP.
Oh, really?
And I have to turn off DNS.
Well, didn't Eric talk about the Google router and that it set up different networks within its house? Yeah. And I think maybe that's why you have to turn off the DHCP.
I'm not going to say no, but what I don't understand is if it's on a different network, then why should it matter?
Correct.
To me, it shouldn't matter, but obviously it does because the damn thing wasn't working. So I believe if I hook it all back up and then I turn off DHCP and I turn off DNS and I want to say there was something else I had to turn off, then supposedly it would work fine. The other reason why is even if I do get it up and running, then I got to stop and figure out how to do the NAT forwarding through the firewall for my Banana Pro running my instance of OwnCloud.
Oh, right.
Or else everyone's going to say, hey, Dor, I tried to upload a show and it ain't working. Sorry. You know what I mean? Because I have at least 4 other people uploading content to that server that I have to post. So I can't have downtime with that either. So it really is like a catch-22 where I'm tempted to take my own cloud instance installed on a DigitalOcean droplet, repoint the DNS to that server temporarily just so I get this thing up and running. But that, I don't have confidence in that going smooth either. I'm a little, you know, I've only ever tested in production, and I don't like people relying on me, having me fail on them because I'm testing in production again. Okay. Well, I don't really have any more links or things to talk about. I will say, again, I mentioned last week, Pinebook emails went out. For some reason, I don't see my email for the 14-inch version yet. I do have somebody in the Mattermost server who said, look, I got an email for the 14. If you want it, Door, you know, we can figure out how, you know, I can basically send him the money and he can order it for me kind of thing. Because I can't do the 11-inch model. I'm pretty sure my eyes won't work with it too well. I keep looking for that dream laptop that runs ARM processor with 2 gigs of RAM that gives me a full work day's worth of juice in it. It's a pipe dream, but I, you know, we can all dream, can't we?
Yeah, yeah, and I know what you're talking about. I actually, I'm sporting my old MacBook Pro unibody, and the battery's getting kind of beat, even though it was a recent replacement battery. And then I went into my wife's closet and grabbed her Acer Aspire. Hold on, what model is it? It's a 5735, 4 gigs RAM max. And I threw Ubuntu on it and, you know, did it as a live disk, and it worked good. You know, YouTube videos played nice. I was real happy with it. No issues. In other words, you know, absolutely as I would expect. And then I'm like, all right, let me do a multi-boot. Let me, you know, boot Windows 10 on it in case my wife needs a backup machine again, and I'll, and I already have 4 partitions, so I'm, but the battery on the thing is toast also, and I got a battery for it in 2015. So I just ordered a new battery. And I guess one of the things you got to worry about is this old stock? You know, is it a brand new battery, but old stock that it's basically sat on the shelf too long, and it's, you're getting a battery delivered to you that's half dead.
Right. Well, I'll say this. On Linux, I don't know about this information ever being available on anything Windows, okay? On Mac, I don't know. Maybe there is. But I will say on Linux, it is DMI decode, DMI decode, DMI decode, can actually tell you, read what is the maximum charge of your laptop and what is your maximum charge you're getting. Because for like right now, I can tell on my Lenovo T430, I know for a fact the most charge my battery can hold is 60%. Yet in a lot of the interfaces, and when Windows was installed on this when I got it, it said charge at 100% because it was charged as much as it could be charged. But you know, using Linux and using DMI decode, I can tell the most charge I get is 60.21%. So I know if I do get a battery, how much more life I should expect out of it if it actually goes to 100%. That's my Linux weenie tip of the week.
You know, thanks for bringing that up, because there is this coconut battery app for the Mac, and I've been meaning to run that again and check how my stinking batteries perform, because I had this battery replaced and I don't think it's doing as good as the battery I had before.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I will say, these apps, what I like about them is they'll tell you the cells. They'll tell you all the information that typically you can't find. And with DMI decode, you can even read stuff like your motherboard manufacturer, your motherboard model, your RAM manufacturer, your RAM model, your RAM capacity, your RAM voltage, your hard drive manufacturer, your hard drive model. I mean, all kinds of stuff that people think you typically have to crack your open, you know, crack your computer open to get. It's like one of them crazy powerful tools that you forget about it until you need it again, and then you got to Google search for 2 days till you find it again, kind of thing. If you don't have anything else, Richard, I want to thank everyone for their support. Brian will be back, everyone. Brian is a hardworking man, and things come up, and he has to work not swing shift, on-call shift, which just means he's a man in the band. I mean, that's just the facts of life. Thank everyone for their support. Thank everyone for downloading. Please do not forget, share us on your social media presences. If you like what you hear, we lost our Amazon affiliate account again. $1 month donation would be a great way to support the network. Unless you're okay with us getting ads on the network, that's really the best way to support us. Richard, do you have anything you want to end with?
No, I'm good, Dor. Thank you. Thanks for always having me on. I appreciate it.
And your YouTube channel again was youtube.com/...
Is it user singular or plural? I think it's...
Well, I don't think you even need to put that in. You can just do slash username.
Yeah, it's slash user Richard Hughes 260.
Yeah, I believe you just do youtube.com/ Richard Hughes 260. It automatically redirects. I think. I've been wrong many times in my life. But we'll leave that one till next week. And I want to thank everyone again, and I'll talk to you real soon.
This is Martin from Podnuts Pro. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to be in your ears right now. Don't forget to support all the other Podnuts shows on the Podnuts Network. And we cannot do this without you. So please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com.